Namaste, welcome to the first Q&A session for the Dissolving the Ego course. We hold one every Thursday while the course is running, and they alternate around the satsangs. So next week's Q&A will be Thursday, but 7 p.m. UK time. So if you have any questions or anything you want to send in, it needs to be in before 7 p.m. next Wednesday so we can read it out. Anything that you want to send in is read out anonymously. So you can use the option if there's something you want to ask and you're kind of afraid to put your hand up. You can send that in using the contact form on the page where the link is for this session. You can also, of course, attend the classes live and ask if you want to live on the session. So without further ado, we'll get started. So Natasha, whenever you're ready, if you'd like to begin reading, that would be great. Thank you.
Hi. If you're paying attention to the background awareness, will you lose perception of the phenomena that's happening in awareness? Is it either awareness or phenomena? Or being aware of awareness, you also become aware and can function normally in society with all phenomena? Thanks.
Could you just read that one more time for me?
Thanks. Yeah. If you're paying attention to the background awareness, will you lose perception of the phenomena that's happening in awareness? Is it either awareness or phenomena? Or being aware of awareness, you also become aware and can function normally in society with all phenomena? Thanks.
Thank you. Good question to get us going. So I want to answer this in a few different ways because it comes up several times throughout the courses that we've done and in satsang as well. So our mind thinks that when we start out, and that's why lesson one is to kind of focus on the noumenon, that which is, or the awareness as you're calling it here. And our mind thinks that the awareness is different from the phenomena that are arising in it. So what I'm aware of, like my thoughts, my emotions, my experiences, sensations in my body, are different to and separate from, according to my mind at least, the awareness that's noticing them, the noumenon that they're arising in, the silence, the stillness, consciousness. So while we really sort of have that, we may know intellectually that that is not the case, but while we're still believing that on a deeper level, it'll seem like we have to make a choice, which is what lesson one is all about. It's about making that choice to bring attention to that which is stable, permanent, and unchanging. So the phenomena, we'll look at this deeper in lesson four, but the phenomena don't exist as separate entities. So the things that we're seeing don't really exist as separate things, separate individual, unique things. There's no way any phenomenon, any object could arise and disappear without the awareness that is the background to sustain it, for it to arise out of. So we could say that none of the objects in the room that you're sitting in could be there without the room for them to appear in. It might seem more straightforward that way. Or even to say that the room itself can't appear without the space that the building was built into. So question from the mind, the answer is yes, you have to choose one or the other. But when we come to see that they are the same, then that choice becomes irrelevant. So whether I think I'm looking at a table or a human body or a thought or an emotion or a sensation, physical pain, an itch, a planet, a black hole, universe as a whole, or looking at the awareness, the silence, the stillness, I'm really looking at the same thing, and that's the aim of lesson four. For now, if we can come to understand that if we seem to choose that which is permanent, which is what we're doing more in lesson one, that which is stable, unchanging, and is the only thing that's real, actually, then it may, our mind may freak out a little bit. Well, I can't really focus on the awareness while I'm driving. I can't really listen to the silence while I'm at work. How will I hear what people are saying to me? I won't even care what my boss is telling me to do if I do that. So we can do a little experiment right now to kind of prove that this isn't the case. So if you look at an object in front of you, any object in the room at all, pick any object, it can be your body, it can be anything. I'm going to use my hand as an example because it's here. If I look at my hand, my eyes, my physical senses are looking at my hand. I can see with my eyes that there's a hand right here. And at the same time, while my physical senses are looking at my hand, I can be aware of the space around it, the contextual field, or I can be aware that there's awareness of this hand, that which is aware is not the same as that which is looking at the hand. Or we could say, right now, your ears are hearing these words, your physical ears. But that which is hearing, the hearing, is not using the senses. And again, we'll look at this more in lesson 3. So actually, you can come to do both. You can be aware of the phenomena using your senses, using your mind. So our 5 senses help us be aware of phenomena in an external way. We can touch, taste, smell, all of that and see. In our minds, we're aware of the subtle phenomena, so emotions, thoughts, things like that, things that we can't perceive with our physical senses. But that which perceives subtle and gross phenomena doesn't need the senses and isn't limited, isn't even using those. I mean, it can use those, but doesn't have to. So both is the answer. So I can watch the TV. And I really enjoyed doing my meditation this way for quite some time. Everybody's going to give this a go now. I'm watching something on Netflix. And as I'm watching, or Prime, whatever I was watching, I'm aware of the space around, in front of, between me, my body and the screen. You can do this right now. You can look at the screen in front of you and be aware of the space all around it, the space between your body and it. So in this way, it becomes a kind of a constant, more and more constant meditation. It's not something we're necessarily doing. Even if you're sitting for 20 minutes with your eyes closed and I'm listening to the silence, I can also recognize that even if I can't hear anything, I can still hear that there's nothing to hear. So the absence of sound, I hear just as well as the presence of sound. I hear nothing. I hear nothingness and I hear somethingness. I hear the words, the somethingness of these words, and the nothingness of the silence in between them. And I can see the visual field in my eyes. And then when I close my eyes, I can see that there's nothing, no thing, no object, no phenomena to perceive. And now they're all seemingly back again. So it depends how deep you want to go with this question. We could do a whole satsang on this one. maybe we will one day. At first, it feels like you have to choose. And the reason I'm saying that is because it brought up some fear for me. If I fall in love with the silence, which I was doing when I first started to really do this kind of meditation, there was a real fear that arose for me that I won't be able to drive my car, or I won't be able to pay attention to the phenomena that I need to. I won't be able to do what I need to do throughout the day. Will I be able to function? And actually, I found that with my senses on the phenomena that I needed to pay attention to, and my awareness, increasingly aware of itself as watching the phenomena, then I found that I actually began to function better. I'm less stressed, more organized, which is a huge thing for me. Less procrastination, almost zero. I'd got to be truthful, almost zero, not totally. But everything that was getting in the way of that functioning was the thoughts about the perceived objects that I thought were there. Thoughts about emotions, thoughts about awakening, thoughts about other people, thoughts about sensations in the body. Those are the things that were actually impeding the functionality. And when they're actually beginning to leave, because you realize that what you're looking at and where you're looking from are the same thing, then it really does become much simpler. There's nothing to think about. There's no thing to think about. That's eventually why the mind goes quiet. So I'm trying to give you all the information you need to really take your question to the fullness of the answer, because that one question in itself that you sent in would take you all the way back to total freedom and is the essence of all the lessons put together. So I wanted to spend a bit of time on that. Have a ponder on that and see what you think, and then or don't think. And then we can, if you want to take that further, I'd be delighted. Thanks, Natasha.
How much practice do we really need to do? Teachers often say that students shouldn't and needn't overdo the time spent or effort put into practicing, or at least meditating, but they themselves seem to have invariably awakened at the end of many years of slog. I'm very glad to have discovered in non-duality a set of teachings that unambiguously encourages a purpose. In some schools, we are told not to think about outcomes, but just do the practice. Could it be that this helps keep presence in view? What really bothers me is that I'm very lazy, and I have reason to believe I will never get anywhere. I guess I'm looking to overcome this belief.
Good question again. So let me just start by telling you the truth. You will never get anywhere. That's fundamental. You're never going to get anywhere. I never got anywhere. Never arrived, actually. And that became a blissful thing. Kept trying to arrive for quite some time. And eventually just kind of relaxed into the unfolding, the journey of the body and mind, at least, as the truth is reflected ever clearer through. Through the body-mind vehicle. And laziness, you know, is a very underrated quality in a spiritual seeker, in an aspirant, because that laziness is the effortlessness coming to the surface. And I really pushed it away for quite some. I just can't be bothered to work hard here in this and to really struggle and really, I mean, I did. And you pointed to that, right? Teachers seem to have awakened after many years of slog. So after many years of slog, about 23 for me, and change, there was about 18 months of slowing down, relaxing, letting go, being lazier, procrastinating more, in terms of spiritual practice at least, and a deeper and deeper understanding that I am already doing nothing, that I'm not a separate being that's doing this awakening, making it happen, began to unfold. And with that, a laziness that was just absolutely celebrated and revered. I'm just sitting here metaphorically watching everything unfold. And the only thing that's seemingly in the way of that is this legendary separate being that we all think we are, that needs to do this to get this right, to make the right choices. How much practice do I do? How much is enough? And that's why, you know, I start lesson one by, or not start it, but during the lesson, I said 20 minutes is enough. You can do more if you want, but it's not going to get you there twice as fast. Why? Because it's not about clock time or effort. It's about why we're coming to the practice. Why do I want to hear the silence? Why do I want to be conscious of my consciousness? Is it because I'm trying to get somewhere? to an imaginary end point where I'm awakened because I'm not now, or to a place where I'm worthy because I'm not now, or ready for awakening because I'm not now. All of these are motivations based on this idea that I'm not already what I'm trying to become. So this trying to become falls away, and eventually we sort of stumble accidentally into, despite our best efforts, into this effortlessness. We just kind of fall into that. And that's the purpose of lesson three, is to kind of expedite that. I'm already where I'm trying to get to. I'm looking from that place. And then 20 minutes done consistently from that place, where I, even if you only know that intellectually, mentally right now, that's enough. It's not about clock time. I've seen people with too much time fail to wake up. I've seen people with full-time jobs and families to run and parents that need caring for wake up because they have so little time that they really have to, the fact that they devote what little time they have means they really want to do this as the self, really need to get this. So it's not about clock time. It's about, why are we sitting? If we're sitting for 20 minutes, why are you doing that? Why are you meditating for 20 minutes? And of course, at first, there's going to be this motivation. I need to get somewhere. I have to achieve something. I have to become the self, the noumenon, the awareness, the silence. But more and more, the second motive for sitting, which is there right from the start, but just becomes clearer as the other one falls away, which is, I just like listening to the silence. Because it's peaceful, because it's joyful, because it's fun, because it's feels totally lazy. So it took me a while to uncover this other motive, my reason for meditating, because for quite some time, 23 years, I was doing it to get somewhere. So all those beings that have awoken to that great slog, it's always happened in the end, unfolded consciously, rather than happening, for want of a better word, because they came to realize they already are what they're seeking. That's the only reason everyone ever wakes up fully, is that no one ever arrived ever. And there's this beautiful line from the Ashtavakra Gita that says, nobody is lazier than the master. He cannot even be bothered to blink his eyes. And it's pointing to this, this sense, you know, we have this sense that I'm deciding what I'm going to say right now. I'm choosing what actions I'll do later today or not do. I'm inflating my lungs. I'm blinking my eyes. I'm deciding even when to go to the bathroom, when to eat, and all of that. And actually, that's not really true, is it? It's just, I'm just here. It's the only thing I can say. Everything else, even the blinking, is going on spontaneously. So have at it. Be really lazy here. Full permission. If you sit down and just give yourself permission to do absolutely nothing, you'll just fall into meditation. Like, I can't even be bothered to push away the fear I'm feeling. It's too much hard work, or it's like too, I can't be bothered to kind of hold on to the deep bliss I'm feeling. I just don't want to exert any effort at all. All the objects appearing in the room that you're sitting in are effortlessly here. You're not doing anything to sustain them. Thoughts arise, come and go all by themselves. And there's nothing that you're doing to make or stop that happening. When mind goes quiet, it does it all by itself. When it starts up again, it does it all by itself. And you're just watching effortlessly already. So I like laziness. It's really underrated. I hope that gives you a kind of reassurance with it, because it does seem to be an issue. And it would be an issue if you were a seeker that had to effort. But you're not. So maybe that is the self already coming to the surface. I've tried hard work. I've tried struggle. I tried effort and it didn't work. So let's try a different way now. So, thanks, Natasha.
My work in the world is coming more into focus again, although it was always somewhat of a dilemma. I see clients as a psychotherapist. I didn't choose this career. Life circumstances in a rather wondrous way decided things for me. And yet I always said to myself, how can I be in a profession to help the psyche when I don't even believe it exists? It's like fixing a cloud. That being said, it's also about helping others to touch into a perspective that they might never have had access to. And I've been deeply privileged to have had profound spiritual guidance. I don't use spiritual words in my work unless a client seeks me out in that way. But nevertheless, it's the best that I can offer from my deepest heart when there is an opening, although I'm clearly not a spiritual teacher. I'm feeling the dilemma again as I focus more and more on the noumenon and resist somewhat being pulled into a space where I'm supposed to help others with phenomenon. A part of me understands that the answer will unfold as my process deepens, but another part would welcome your thoughts on this with much love and gratitude.
Thank you. It comes up again and again. I seem to attract psychotherapists to the course. And you use the analogy of the cloud, and I think that's a good one. It's like trying to fix a cloud, which doesn't really exist. As you said, the cloud is just water vapor, same water vapor that's in the sky, but invisible as the sky. And then suddenly it becomes visible, seems to be something. So while we still believe in the essential, the first duality, the first set of opposites, form and formless, or emptiness and somethingness, or phenomena and the unmanifest, while we still believe in those, then this choice will seem to be a real issue for you that will come back over and over again. And, you know, you face it as a spiritual teacher. Do I talk to people about their karmic patterns, try to help them with those, or do I just tell them that they don't exist? Because that's the absolute truth. There's no one to have them. There's nobody with any karmic patterns. There's nobody to feel fear and all of that. But the noumenon, the emptiness, the silence is appearing as a human being. And with that appearance as a human being, it's not actually a human being. Or you could say that the human being and the word emptiness must become synonyms in our own, in the depth and the core of our being that we're going to look at this in lesson four. Then the psyche becomes another synonym for silence, stillness. Stillness can appear as movement. Peace can appear as disturbance, conflict, and everything in between. So technically, yes, it doesn't exist. And you're talking about a cloud that doesn't exist. But to that person that's in front of you, that cloud is a storm cloud. And it's raining all over their lives, isn't it? It's like thunder and lightning, and it's, you know, really quite disturbing. And you could talk about the background sky forever. You know, forget about the cloud, look at the sky that it arose out of. And they just can't hear you until they can. How to get them to that point where they can hear you sooner? To help them bring this storm cloud back into some kind of white, fluffy, puffy thing, you know, that's just floating like a summer, you know, on a summer's day. And that sometimes, again, eventually becomes the same thing. So whether I'm, and then we'll look at this in lesson two, you know, how to undo the storm clouds, basically. How to stop being what you're not is quite often as important as how to be what you already are. That's why lesson one, lesson two go hand in hand. The other side of the coin. You can't have the heads without the tails. When I really got this, this is where lesson two came out of, that someone, I could have the most profound spiritual wisdom. You know, you could have the Buddha stood right in front of you, but if he can't reach you, if he can't help you right where you're at right now, whatever that is for each one of us is unique and different at each moment, then it's useless. And all that spiritual wisdom is just useless if you can't get past the incredibly intense emotion that you're feeling in that moment. And only really when you've started to stop resisting that, when you've begun to let go of resisting whatever is occurring in front of you, in your body, in your mind, then only then can you begin to focus on the background as a consistent thing, at least. We might have these moments where we just totally see this guy, oh my God, it's always been there, but then it covers over again. It's gone, isn't it? It's just a fleeting seeing, because what's going on in the clouds is taking so much of our energy and attention. And we're habitually drawn back to that. And we seem to lose the bigger picture then. So you can give them the gift of being an awakened psychotherapist, which is massive. When you realize the thoughts and the emotions that they're talking about are empty of substance, I'm not suggesting you say that to them, of course, you can in something like this course, but they believe that they're real and they believe that they're suffering from those thoughts and those emotions and those situations. And of course, when that seems real, because they really are the infinite self, then they infinitely experience that as true. And any kind of absolute truth at that point is just going to be unable to reach them. So you can help them work through the apparent phenomena whilst not judging them, whilst unconditionally loving them. And that is so valuable. And none of us would be here in this class, in this course, in this awakening, without some kind of work like that. Maybe not psychotherapy, but we've had to learn to feel emotions. We've had to learn to look more dispassionately at the mind. We've had to learn to deal with relationships, and you just cannot avoid those things, can you? So for me, an awakened psychotherapist is gold, and we need awakened physicians, and we need awakened dentists and awakened school teachers and awakened psychotherapists, and you know, ad infinitum. So and you know this, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's just really to help that unfold. And you said the answer will unfold as you go, and you know deep down this is what you're supposed to be doing. You've said it just kind of happened. Every now and again you come across a client who is you're able to say non-duality or silence or something too. But most times you won't be able to, and that's okay. so when you meet them where they're at, that is the best gift you can give anyone. Shoulds and shouldn'ts, you should be able to focus on the background here of awareness, but that's it's not useful, is it? It's not helpful at all. You should be able to feel this fear without resisting it. That's not helpful either. Okay, so you are resisting it and you're feeling fear. Okay, can you accept that? Yes, okay. I can accept I'm scared, and I can accept I'm resisting this fear. I can accept there's a lot of trauma coming up or whatever's going on. And then you're right there in the awakened state, total acceptance of what is. So here's the full circle of the answer, is that you and I are really doing the same thing. In fact, everyone's doing the same thing. Every awakened being ends up being a spiritual teacher in a way, not like this, not running courses. I mean, of course you can if that's the way it wants to express itself. But when you just let someone be who they are in this moment, you just smile as you walk past someone in the supermarket, and you make them feel all right about themselves for a nanosecond until whatever happens to them next. That's teaching in a way, isn't it? That's, you're teaching by your presence, your example. You're not necessarily teaching with words and classes and Zoom calls and all of that, but still nonetheless teaching. This is another way that you can be as a human being. And like I'm doing right now, I'm just, as I walk past you and smile, and I don't have any judgmental thoughts about you, I'm letting you be. Or I don't judge my judgmental thoughts about you, then I'm letting you and me be at the same time. So hope that helps. It comes up very, very often. Non-duality includes duality. If it didn't, it wouldn't be non-duality. In fact, eventually we come to a place where they are the same thing. Non-duality means not two. Therefore, everything we could ever experience ever must be the one, even the fragmented, tortured human psyche. And from there, you can just love it and allow it to dissolve. So I hope that helps you move forward with more confidence. Thank you, Natasha.
What's the need of therapy and healing the wounded child?
See my previous answer.
It really necessary in the path of self-realization, or is it just being conscious of being conscious the best therapy? Thanks a lot.
Sorry about that. Obviously everything I've just said, and noticing the idea here that it's one or the other. And again, this replies to my previous answer as well. A mind wants to take something that looks like opposites. Do I do this one or this one? And the self says, yes, have at it, all of the above. So for me, there was a time when I was really trying to unravel a big karmic pattern this one was around unworthiness, as more, all of them are, right? Pretty much. Stemming from a sense of separateness. And it really helped me to have some therapy sessions to discuss it with someone who could ask me the right questions to actually draw me far enough away from what was going on, because it'd been going on my entire life, like these patterns have, to help me reflect back and go, oh yeah, that's what's going on there. Because I would have eventually and undone it by myself, unraveled it, but I didn't want to wait, you know, I didn't want to suffer anymore, and I just could not go around that cycle one more time with that same thing happening again. I could not go through that again, so I had to kind of do something else. So I have absolutely nothing against that. If you feel it's helpful, absolutely go for it. And especially if you can find an awakened therapist, even better. But even just to get help looking objectively at your thoughts and the way that you react to certain things can help you see what kind of emotions are there under the surface that haven't been acknowledged because we haven't been able to. It just speeds up what's already happening. It's really one and the same. When you start with a therapist, you're just looking at what's going on in your mind. You're just watching compassionately, perhaps more compassionately than you're able to do on your own, and helping you open up to that and really look at it, really be with it for the first time, maybe, which is what we're doing here. And when we're looking at the silence, the awareness, we're just letting whatever's going on in the phenomenal world inside and outside, we're just letting it be. You cannot listen to the silence and resist the phenomena at the same time. You can't be aware of awareness and push away an emotion. It's just not possible. So really they're one and the same thing. And for me, the only time that I could actually really look at that wounded child that didn't feel like it got the love that it needed, or the support, or the security, or the safety, whatever, the recognition, the approval, was after seeing clearly that I'm not that wounded child, that it's a mental construction that's been continued from where I left off last incarnation and added to with my experiences in this physical body and onwards. And you can only really fully undo it from there, totally. So quite often the two things go hand in hand, two things being some kind of therapy and some kind of non-dual practice. It's a non-dual practice because it's an oxymoron. But anyway, the limit of words. I hope that helps to kind of If you feel it's useful, then it will be useful. If you feel it won't be useful, you won't get anything out of it. You decide everything in that way. And there is some kind of, I've come across it many times in my own pathway from other people, some kind of stigma around needing therapy and things like that. And, you know, if you burnt your hand accidentally, you wouldn't just go, you know, I'm not going to go to the hospital because I don't need any help with this. This shouldn't have happened. Therefore, I'm not going to treat it. You know, you just wouldn't do that, would you? But we do that with our mind all the time. We push it away. Physical injury, we get it looked at immediately. An emotional injury, not so much. So every form of healing has its time and has its usefulness at the right time. And really, a deep seeing of what you actually are is going to undo all of it anyway. But, you know, that can be helped and augmented by lots of other things at the same time. Otherwise, you know, why go to yoga? Why do some yoga? Why stretch? Why go for a walk? Why try to eat better? All that stuff, right? It's all going to help what's already occurring. It's not going to cause anything. It's just going to help what's already unfolding. Just like this course and your practice isn't causing anything. It's just helping what's already unfolding, facilitating that. So if you think it's useful, have at it. Absolutely. And it will be. It'll be very useful.
Okay. The last question. So much intense emotion is coming up for me now. How do I know what is the perimenopause? I'm 45 and in the early stages. And what is caused by the awakening process? Sometimes I think I'm going mad and pretending to myself that all this seeking is getting me somewhere. But I know that this is also a thought.
Yeah, so I want to start this answer by pointing out again the tendency that our mind has, or our separate sense of self, or our ego, all the same thing, I'm just using them synonymously, to look at two options that it thinks are different and try to pick one. So this intense emotion I'm having, is it because I'm awakening, or is it because I'm in perimenopause? So mind says it's one of those, and I need to know which one it is. And that's why you feel you're going mad, right? And I've totally, totally been there. But what if both of those are the same thing? So as you come to see, and it must be the same thing, if form and formless are the same, which we're going to look at deeper as we go through. One thing showing up two different ways. You can show up as empty space or as the hand in the empty space. You can show up as the formless silence or the emotion that's being felt in that silence. And instead of or, let's put the word and. You can show up as empty space and the emotion at the same time, because they're not two different things. So most of awakening for me, when I really understood it, was about going beyond the either or options and saying yes to both. So I might neglect my mind and body if I say this is obviously because I'm awakening and it's not due to anything to do with menopause. Or I might, you know, look at the other stereotypical view. I'm 45 and I'm starting to go through menopause and I need to go get that checked out, and then this thing will go away. And that leaves a splinter in the mind, because it cannot resolve it. It goes for one option, the other one seems to be left behind. It goes to this one spirals out of control also. And the mind cannot see that these are both the same thing. It's looking at two seemingly different options and then cannot see that they are the same one appearing two different ways, just like ice and water vapor in the air are all H2O molecules appearing three different ways. So as you wake up to what you really are, see clearer the formlessness that is everything, everywhere, you're going to become more and more aware of beliefs, thoughts about that you had about yourself as a seemingly separate being that no longer fit in with that. And those thoughts and beliefs and emotions and experiences that go along with it. The thought, the emotion, and the experience are all one thing showing up three different ways. The unconscious belief, we'll look at this on Sunday, are all the same thing. And so is the silence. Silence can show up as silence, as a belief, I'm not good enough, something like that, as an emotion, guilt, shame, unworthiness, and as an experience, a physical body experience of what we call menopause, or 100,000 different other ways, right? The physical experience could be in a relationship, could be that your boss is just mean to you, could be that you never have enough money, it could be that you can't find the right person you want to spend your life with, it could be 100,000 things. So it's always both. And as you really get that, it takes a little looking at, there's a relaxation then in the mind, because the mind is really disturbed trying to figure out which one it is, because it really feels, it divides reality into two, the mind, doesn't it? Good, bad, wanted, not wanted, better, worse, true, untrue, reality, illusion. At the end of the day, though, that separation has to disappear. You can show up as reality and you can show up as the illusion. So are you a 45-year-old woman who's starting to go through menopause? Maybe, I don't know if you are or not, but, or are you the formless self? Yes. And most of the humbling phase of my awakening was to come to admit I'm also, well, I'm 47 now, 47-year-old woman, mother of four, and all of that that goes with that. Everything about my human experience, everything that I was rejecting about my human experience, I had to come to accept, because I am also showing up as this human being. I can't just say, well, the body isn't real. The body isn't a body, it is the self. But it's showing up, the self is showing up as a body, as an emotion, as a relationship with mother and daughter, sister and sister, you know, as the relationship I have with my parents, all of that, right? Everything must be included back into the wholeness of that. And this is what this is really, it's not really about, are you in menopause or is this a karmic pattern? It's, can you see that they're both the same thing? Because I can go through menopause and it is the worst experience I've ever had. It goes on forever and it ruins my life. Or I can go through menopause and it's a graceful, beautiful unfolding of a deeper stage of my physical existence. What determines the difference between that? Well, it's how many beliefs I'm holding onto from the remnants of the separate being. Because our body, our mind, our experiences, our life, our relationships are a reflection of what we know to be true. So while I feel not good enough or not safe or disempowered, whatever belief I'm holding on to, then that's going to reflect as my emotions immediately, as an emotional experience. It's also going to show up physically in some way. I know from my own experience and from being with other people that the symptoms of menopause can arise with a lot of shame and unworthiness. Be difficult in social situations, things like that. We'll look at this more on Sunday, like literally how to unravel these things, cause and effect thinking. And then we'll look at how to undo that with contemplation. But for now, the answer for this one, can you come to see that it's both? And even deeper than that, that both implies two. And well, I think there's two, I'm going to be trying to choose one or the other. And that's really what's disturbing is deep down. It's a thorn, it's a splinter inside our being. Because the moment you feel divided, you'll be suffering. And here is a subtle way that we keep dividing ourselves. So I hope that helps with that answer. Thank you very much, Natasha, for reading. Clear and beautiful as always. And What we'll do now is we'll take a 5-minute break. I will stop this recording and